What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Yanks the Cop. We have a very special Friday's Final Word today. But before we get to that, my name is Andrew. You can find me on Twitter at ScansLFC. And as always, I am joined by Wahomi. You can find him at LFC underscore Wahomi. But today, our special guest is Gareth Roberts from the Anfield Wrap. Gareth, thank you so much for joining us today. We love your material. We love the Anfield Wrap. How are you doing on this Friday?
Yeah, okay. Thanks for having me on. Delighted to be invited on. And I mean, it'd be better, wouldn't it, if the Reds were winning games and not sort of just giving goals to Real Madrid on a plate. But, you know, you can't have everything. Aston Villa tomorrow. So let's hope they're a bit better tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree. Can't have everything. Hopefully, we can get a little more this game against Aston Villa, and then again against Real Madrid. But let's actually—that's kind of where my first question lies. What's everybody's feeling? And Gareth, we'll start with you. But what's your feeling about that game against Real Madrid, and then going forward to Wednesday?
The game against Madrid. I was really confident actually going into it, perhaps stupidly so on reflection, but I bought into the idea that, you know, they were not the team that they once were, that they had a lot of aging players in the side and that kind of thing. And I really expected us to sort of be coming out the blocks, closing them down, pressing high up the pitch, and just have a bit too much for them, to be honest. And it just didn't turn out like that, did it? Let's be honest. And I think what was worrying about it was just sort of the collective mental state of Liverpool. I mean, there was, you know, we all saw it, and there were stages there where, you know, they couldn't pass the ball 5 yards, and even sort of reliable players that, you know, have, you know, been through everything with us, won the Champions League with us, won the Premier League. I'm sort of like, even Wijnaldum, who just for me is always sort of 7 out of 10, you know, yeah. Mr. Reliable. He's given the ball away in midfield, simple passes, and it just seemed there was just they just were not on it at all. And Real Madrid were the complete opposite. They were very much on it. They had a game plan. They targeted, you know, the right-hand side of the defence. But it still annoys me, and it's still annoying me now a few days on, that you're giving Cruz the time and space to play that ball. I mean, he literally looks up, you know, knocks the ball out of his feet a little bit, sort of points where he's going to play it, and then pings the pass. And of course he can ping those passes. And then equally, of course, another player for Real Madrid can bring it down on his shoulder and use his pace and get away. You know, all of that was just sort of highly predictable. And I didn't understand where the collective press was gone that was going to trouble Madrid. And if anything, the press was the other way around, and their press was troubling us. In terms of on Wednesday, I mean, I think it will be partly dictated by what we see tomorrow night. I mean, or tomorrow afternoon, the form at Anfield, shocking, as we all know. They've lost the last six. You know, they've lost 12 this season, and 7 of them have been at Anfield. Only one goal this year at Anfield, and that was a penalty.
Yeah.
So, you know, here we are going to up against Real Madrid, saying, well, we need to get 2 and keep a clean sheet. You know, neither thing looks likely statistically and on the basis of recent form. But, you know, you never say never, don't you, and all that. But I don't know. I'm a bit more conservative about this one than I would be ordinarily, I think. I mean, if we were in the ground, I think that would make a huge difference. You know, if we were greeting the bus, if it was a packed Anfield, if everyone was doing in Liverpool what they do, which is on nights like that, take an half day off work for a start off, get on the aisle, get in the ground early and make it a bear pit. I mean, we won't have any of that. Instead, they're just playing in front of empty stands. And, you know, I think that's to Real Madrid's advantage a little bit. But so we need to see a reaction tomorrow, first of all, is what I would say. You know, we need to beat Villa for our top four hopes. See where they're at mentally and physically in that game. And then I think you'll have a clearer picture of maybe what we can expect on Wednesday. But on the basis of the last match played, you've got to be a bit realistic and say, looks a bit ropey.
Yeah, I think the absence of fans is definitely going to make it much more difficult than it otherwise could have been. But Wahomi, what do you think?
Yeah, I feel like that sentence, like Gareth saying, like I still feel. I think when I think about that game, annoyed. And I just feel like, you know, I bought into the same as well. Like, I was really excited, thinking, oh, this is a, there's no Varane, there's no Ramos. Like, you know, thinking, oh, Jota's going to kill them. He's in electric form over the international break. And yeah, it was just like disappointing how we started. You know, I was just going to ask like to Gareth, like, did you feel that we looked star-studded? Like we were in awe of Madrid. Like we showed them too much respect, because I felt like we were, you know, like we were like watching Tony Cruz pick up the ball. We know his skill set. And instead of no one pressing him down, no one making any moves to kind of like, let's close him down. So it's like they were just in awe. It felt like they were in awe just watching Madrid, Ramos, Modric and Cruz pass the ball around. So right. I was just wondering, like, it just kind of worried me, the fact that, you know, the lack of press that you normally associate with a Klopp's team, the lack of energy, the lack of hunger just wasn't there again, you know. And so I was wondering, like, from your point of view, I mean, we've spoken about this quite a bit, but from your point of view, did you feel like there was any point that we showed Madrid too much respect, or we were in awe of them in terms of it's Madrid, it's the kings of Europe?
I don't think it was about Madrid as such. I think maybe it's about the season, the way the season's gone, and about the opportunity that was there. So I think they all knew, you know, that this is the chance to save the season. This is a huge game. You've got to go in and perform. And it just looked, you know, mentally, collectively, that they were not in the right place. I think as well that, you know, as much as we were all delighted to see three or four clean sheets from Phillips and Kabak, you know, I don't think there's a collective trust of them as a centre-back pair. And I think everyone is playing slightly differently to compensate for the fact that it's not Gomez and it's not Van Dijk. I think what you saw when we had those there, that everybody trusted those players. That, you know, we played a higher line the other night, but we played an even higher line when Virgil was there. And I think even if it's only 1 or 2% where they're like, you know, like, they might want to go forward or something, but then they think, I've got to sort of stay in because, you know, Nat Phillips can get caught for pace, or, you know, and they're just not sure. There's just not that surety there that I think we had when we were winning things, when we were flying, and when we had Virgil at the back. And I think that sort of spreads through the team at times. And, you know, you look at, you know, the Arsenal, we got excited about the Arsenal game, obviously. We beat Leipzig, we beat Wolves, but, you know, Arsenal hardly laid a glove on us. Like, so, you know, that was easy enough in terms of defensive duties that day. There wasn't a lot of defensive work to do. But obviously it was a bit of a different story against the quality of Real Madrid. So, yeah, I don't know if it was, you know, them being starstruck or whether it was the occasion. I think maybe more the occasion. I just don't, you know, what you want psychologically is for them to be playing with freedom, really, where they all trust themselves. And I'm just not sure that's there still. And I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, we've been dragged down into this bit of a pit that we're in at home as well. I mean, it's just become a thing. It's become a burden. It's become a mental situation, a hurdle that they need to get over. And that's why it's vital that they need to do, you know, they need to do something against Aston Villa. The problem is that, you know, and we were talking about this on the Anfield app today. For me, it's boosting all the opposition as well. You know, I've seen Aston Villa's manager doing his press conference today, and he's saying, well, we've got an opportunity here to go and do the double against the champions. And that doesn't happen very much. And then, you know, the fella on Sky saying it hasn't happened since, I think, the mid-90s or something, that Villa have beat the champions home and away. And it feels like, you know, the team, the squad, Liverpool has got this bit of a target on its back, and everyone's seeing an opportunity to take advantage. So sides are coming to Anfield and they're going, well, we've seen Burnley win, and we've seen Brighton win, and we've seen Fulham win. So why not? Do you know what I mean? Whereas I think ordinarily when you're flying, you've got the crowds, when you're, you know, unbeaten for 2 years or whatever it may be, they're coming there scared, worried, you know, and the things have flipped round a little bit. And I think what I see with Liverpool as well currently, which is again a little bit worrying, and they need to sort of get out of this funk. I think you will always, we keep seeing individuals collectively, they look like they feel sorry for themselves at times, I think.
Yes.
And that manifests itself in different ways. So I think, you know, we all saw, didn't we, against Madrid that, you know, Sadio Mane felt a bit hard done by in terms of the refereeing on the night and things like that. But that's just the thing. You've just got to cope with that. You can't influence the referee. You can't control the referee. So, okay, he's not giving you stuff. He hasn't given you quite a key decision where they've gone to the other end of the pitch and score. But so what? Like, don't let it ruin your whole day. Don't let it ruin your whole game. Just put it to one side, keep on going, and keep on being Sadio Mane. But I think he's letting things like that get to him. And a few of them look like things are getting to them. And I think Robertson even referenced it in one of the interviews he did not so long ago, where he said, you know, we are feeling sorry for ourselves a little bit, because goals go in, and it seems like they're not like, come on, Wissam, we're going to get one back. Instead, right. Like, oh, shit, this again. Do you know what I mean? And I think, you know, and it's understandable. But I think, you know, that's what needs to change. That's what needs to flip. I think they're just a bit psychologically vulnerable at the moment.
Yeah, just real quick to everybody in the chat, thank you so much for joining us today. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button. We really appreciate it. But there actually was a great question here in the chat, or a great statement from GC. He or she said that tomorrow is a bigger game than Wednesday. Do you guys agree with that? JG also said we need this one. It's a big one. Hopefully we have more hunger this go around. Do you guys think that the Aston Villa game is bigger than the Real Madrid game?
I'll go ahead, Gav. I'll let you go.
I was just going to say, I bigger is arguable, obviously. But I take the point. I think it was similar to what I was trying to say before, in that one leads into the other. So, you know, top four is not gone by any stretch of the imagination. You know, Neil Atkinson currently keeps saying to me that he's refusing to look at the league table. And I'm saying, well, look at it, mate, because I'm like, you know, you might see us in seventh and that might annoy you and it might piss you off. I said, but if you start digging into it, it's actually not, you know, we're seventh, but we're 3 points off fourth. And, you know, we've got a better goal difference than West Ham. And, you know, the other week when you were looking at it, Chelsea had a much better goal difference than Liverpool. But then Liverpool comfortably beats Arsenal and Chelsea got humped by West Brom. And all of a sudden, you know, they've only got a plus one goal difference on us. And it may well come down to goal difference. So, yeah, I'm with them in that Aston Villa's huge, bigger. Well, you know, you always look at the Champions League, you look at big ears, you think about the, you know, that beautiful trophy. And Real Madrid as well are annoying. I always think in the sort of, you know, we've won 13 and all this, but, you know, half of them were when there was about four sides contesting the competition or whatever. I mean, it is impressive when you go out there and all that, and they big themselves up, and I guess you would do. But yeah, you know, we're European royalty as well, and, you know, it was fantastic when we were beating them. It was also particularly grim to go to Real Madrid's ground and see Brendan Rodgers lash the reserves out. I'm still not quite over that one either. But Villa is huge. There's no two ways about it. Villa's massive, I think, in terms of just keeping momentum going, keeping belief going, you know, keeping our sights on saving this season, basically, because it has been a shit show of a season. And it's only the fact that, you know, no one's been truly outstanding. Even City, yeah, okay, I get it, the top of the league, they're going to win it. But, you know, Liverpool of last season were better than them, where they are currently. You know, we had better points per game, we scored more goals, whatever you want, whatever metric you want to measure it by. Like, everyone has had their problems this season. And because of that, I still think there's a huge, it's not just a chink of light, there's a significant shaft of light there for Liverpool to aim at. And, you know, you look at Chelsea as well. I'm looking for anything at the moment. I'm made up that Chelsea, you know, Chelsea players are beating each other up in training or whatever. Fantastic. You know, Tuchel is known to be quite spiky with his players and can be quite arsy and, you know, and can kick off on them and all that. I wonder how that'll go down, because when they were on before West Brom, everyone was talking about how great they were and they were on this fantastic run and they deserved all that praise. But I kept holding on to the fact, yeah, but what happens when they get beat? What happens then? How does he manage that? What do the players think about that? And, you know, so, you know, a little Chelsea mini crisis would be brilliant. And let's not rule that out.
Yeah, I just want to go to the chat real quick. Steven Stubbs had a great point here. He said, tomorrow's game is massive, but if we can get a positive result against Villa, hopefully that will give us the confidence against Madrid. If we get the first goal against Madrid, then who knows? I mean, yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that these two games go hand in hand. But at first, it starts with the Aston Villa game. They're both massive games. We have to come out of the gates ready to attack against Aston Villa. We haven't been doing that much this year. We always seem to start slow. And whereas last year, even if we did start slow, we had the confidence that we were still going to win the game. This year, you're not seeing that. And we can get to it in a little bit, but I think it's because of lack of leadership or lack of presence of leadership on the pitch, especially in recent games. But, well, homie, let's go back to you about tomorrow's game. I mean, do you think that it is bigger than the Real Madrid game? Do you think that, you know, this could be the kickstart that we need for the Real Madrid game? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a kickstart. I don't think it's bigger, because I think a lot of people are saying bigger are those who are writing off the Madrid game, saying it's over. But I think for me, tomorrow is going to set a precedent, like, of how we approach the Madrid game. Like, if we go out, then we get a good win at Anfield, then it builds up the confidence before that big game. But if we lose tomorrow, we're going to go into the Anfield game with a lack of, you know, with the confidence really dented and really affecting us. So tomorrow's going to be huge in terms of us, you know, proving that we can win Anfield and we can start looking like strong at Anfield, you know, because obviously, you know, if tomorrow's an away game really in the league, you feel confident Liverpool are going to win because, you know, our away record's been really good. So I think it's key in terms of, you know, getting our season back on track. So I don't think one's more important than the other. I think they are linked to each other in terms of us getting back to, you know, winning streak. Because after defeat, you want to get a win straight away. So this is the perfect chance to get a win. Villa without Grealish, you know, so it's a great chance to, you know, get that defeat out of your system. You know, so like you, I'm saying, yeah, tomorrow I want to see, like, us coming out of the blocks and imposing our game on Villa and showing them that, you know, that they're not coming to Liverpool and getting the double over us this season, you know. So I think it's imperious that we do win tomorrow.
Yeah, and JG said 2 years in a row being top two and now fighting for it. The mentality is why this weekend is big, in his opinion, sets us up for Madrid in the rest of the year. I think that's a good point. And then GC said if we lose tomorrow, we basically go back to no chance of top four. But if we beat Madrid, there is no guarantee we'll win the Champions League. I mean, yeah, that's all true. Just keeping with tomorrow real quick, do you guys expect kind of wholesale changes here? Do you expect a little bit of rotation? Do you expect the same team as Madrid, maybe minus Naby Keita? But what are your thoughts, Gareth?
Yeah, I don't think – I can't see Naby Keita starting the game. I mean, that was a little bit of a surprise the other night, and obviously he takes him off before half-time, which is quite damning. So yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing Naby. I mean,
Do you have a problem with that? Sorry to interrupt, but do you have a problem with him taking Keita off 3 minutes to go before halftime?
I thought it was a little bit mad, I've got to be honest.
I thought it was too.
I just think it's sort of one of those like football sins that, you know, like every manager knows how that will be perceived. It's like Mourinho when he used to substitute people before our time. He was almost doing it to be a knobhead. I mean, I don't think Klopp's done it to be a knobhead. I think he was genuinely worried that the situation could get even worse and he wanted to make the change. And, you know, he said in his press conference today that, you know, he's spoken to Naby about it and that Naby's fine with it. But, you know, you do wonder psychologically how Naby felt about that. He must have felt awful because he gets his chance, you know, away from home, Real Madrid. You know, he's been straining at the leash to get a start, apparently being brilliant in training. And then to have the hook like that, it's basically saying, well, you've been shite, get off. And, I think he's been a little bit scapegoated, you know, because as I said before, I think the whole performance was awful, particularly first half. And, you know, you could have hooked anyone and said, you know, well, we needed to make a change. But, I wasn't particularly into that one. In terms of the team, it pretty much all picks itself, doesn't it? I think there's one or two of them there who look like they could do with a rest, but there's just not much you can do about it. I mean, I think Robertson's chugging a little bit. But, what are you going to do? Simicast? Don't think so. Milner? It's quite a significant drop off. So, you know, there's not much he can do at left back. So Robertson will be asked to go again. It's going to be the same back four, I think. Although there is an argument. There isn't a Simicast. I just I mean, look at how little he's been used so far. And I know he's had his problems, injury. I think he had COVID as well, but I think it says it all, really. It's the same with the lad Davis. The drop-off is clearly quite significant, and that's why they're not getting game time. So, yeah, I think it's your usual back four, obviously usual goalie, and then your questions really are, does Firmino start over Jota, or does he go 4-2-3-1? And that's about it, really. You know what I mean? Everyone else, I know there's a fuss this week about Sadio Mane. There's lots of think pieces. There's a piece on The Athletic. There's a piece on, I think, Liverpool.com and things like that. Klopp's not going to throw him under the bus and suddenly drop him, I don't think. I think what Mane needs, and we've seen it before, is just a goal and a good performance. I mean, you know, he's gone through little weird spells before. I mean, it's, you know, he's only got 12 this season, and two of them were against Aston Villa's kids and all that. I get all that. But equally, you know, I think he would take it badly if he was dropped, given that he's an emotional fella. So I think Mane stays in. Obviously, Salah stays in because he's got 27 goals and you do not drop that. And yeah, it's just a question of Jota or Firmino. And then midfield, yeah, Fabinho is going to start again. He's another one who could probably do with a rest, but you don't rest them in this situation. Gini will go again. And then it's that other slot, isn't it? Is it Thiago? Is it Curtis Jones even? There might be a bit of a temptation to go with Kurt. But I just think the importance of the two games pretty much means you go with your strongest team. What Klopp, I think, would like to do, and it was referenced there, it would be brilliant. I've been saying the same as you, mate, in that, you know, I'm like, come out the trap, start well, get an early goal. But it's been easier said than done. But if we could do that, and I'm praying that we do that, and we could somehow get the results in the bag, in an ideal world, you know, you're 2-0 up, and on second half, you know, six on around about 60, you know, you make a few subs with Wednesday in mind. That would be the perfect way for the match to go. But obviously, football has not been perfect for Liverpool recently.
Yeah, homie, anything to add there?
Yeah, I think it's like I said, I think we are going to play the same team again. You know, as much as we spoke about wholesale changes, it's going to be the same team again because, you know, Klopp's going to realise tomorrow's a must win. You know, like being 2 points off Chelsea, West Ham winning the other weekend, it's must win for us. So he's going to put his best team out. So he might get one or two changes at best, but majority it'll be the same team that overall played against Madrid. So, you know, hands are tied because obviously like I said, with certain players, the drop off is huge. But you know, maybe. I would have liked to have seen maybe like if tomorrow I would like to see Gini given a rest. I think he looks done.
But we know he's not going to do that.
I know.
I know.
But I would have liked to see Curtis Jones come in, give him a run out. Because I don't know what's happened with Jones. He's not seen the pitch in ages.
But he's been busy beating people up for the England under 21s, hasn't he?
You look riled up.
I think everyone's going to say. I was going to say to you, like, Gareth, did you not think it cost of the game not starting Thiago, specifically when we bought Thiago for Champions League nights, you know, because of skill set and how great he was for Bayern Munich last season. But yet, we started Keita. And also, Keita's never played well on the right-hand side, you know, on the right-hand side of midfield. You know, he's always played well when he's playing the left-hand side. So, you know, in that game, there was often where Trent was caught facing 2-on-1s because Naby doesn't want to trap back. So I don't understand why he didn't put Gini that side. Because,
I mean, there's the danger of hindsight now, obviously, isn't it? But when I saw the team, I thought it was mad. When I discussed the team with my mates, I thought it was still mad. And the only thing we could sort of conclude was that it was to be, the aim was to be on the front foot, wasn't it? With Naby being part of that. And, you know, at his best, we haven't seen that anywhere near enough. But at his best, he takes players on, he makes things happen, he can thread the pass, he can score a goal. But it just wasn't that type of match. It was the type of match where, you know, you could have done with someone in there, as you say, supporting the fullback, fighting, getting a basis in the game and all those type of things. I don't think, you know, again, it is with hindsight and all the rest of it, but it didn't work, did it? You know, the plan didn't work, and it was perhaps changed too late. I mean, what was really annoying for me, just to go back to that game one more time, but was when we get the one back. You know, we get the one back and you're like, okay, we've got an away goal. There's your little chink of light. There's your way back into the tie. And then they only hold on to it for 14 minutes. And Madrid's third comes from a throw-in. And it's like, come on. And you know, he I absolutely love Fabinho. I think he's absolutely brilliant. He's one of my favourite players at Liverpool right now. But, you know, he's gone missing on it. It's not just like one or two players, or it's not just Naby, or, you know, it's not just Sadio Mane. As I say, it was a collective shit show the other night. I mean, they will want to put it right. We know that, you know, the mentality has been good across 2 to 3 years now. But, I mean, I didn't... Some of what went on was mad. I mean, you know, Naby Keita was mad. I thought Klopp hooking Keita in that fashion was mad. And I didn't particularly like Klopp stuff about the playing at the training ground thing. I just thought, you didn't need to say that. Like, what difference does it make? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no crowds if we'd played at the Bernabeu. It's still Real Madrid. It's still the Champions League. It's still a quarterfinal. I just didn't think it needed to be mentioned by the manager, that one. And now, you know, of course, the banter boys have jumped on that one. And it's like, you know, yes, another of Klopp's shit excuses. And it's like, oh. But yeah, it was a strange one. And you know, but Thiago's been a strange one, though, hasn't he? I think that's probably a part of it as well. I mean, as you say, he's brought in for games like that. He's brought in as well for games where everyone's behind the ball and he's the man who can make the difference and all that. But it feels like, you know, with Henderson being missing and Fabinho playing in defence and all that, you know, he's adjusted his game almost in the wrong way for Liverpool. So he feels as though he's got to win the ball and he's got to protect the defence. And it's like, no, lad, you're not very good at that. Can you stop doing that? You know, I'm literally having a sweep with my mates on when he gets his standard yellow card. And you know, what surprised face will he pull this week when he gives a foul away? You know, you don't want to see him doing that stuff. You know, we do know what he can do, but again, because of the madness of Liverpool's season, starting with the defence and then the knock-on effect of all around it.
Yeah,
you know, it's not been right for him either. He wants to be in midfield with Fabinho and with Henderson, and that's happened what, once, maybe twice. So you know, it's just a madness of a season. If we can get anything out of it, I'll be absolutely delighted. And the very fact that we've got a chance, well, we should still be talking that up, because, you know, we beat Villa, we go into Madrid, and I think one of you said before, an early goal against Madrid. We can all tell the story and get a little smile on our faces of what could be. And look, you never know. You never know.
Yeah, I just want to get to the chat real quick. There's some good stuff here. Dave's LFC chats. He said he can't see too many changes tomorrow. Steven Stubbs said, I wouldn't be surprised if Mane is taken out of the team and Bobby comes in for him. Also, Milner instead of Genie to freshen up the team a bit. And that's kind of where I wanted to go. GC in the chat had a really good point here. He said Milner needs to play a bigger role with his leadership and experience. As Hendo is out, he is also a top-class player at 35, and his performance away at Arsenal showed it. I mean, Wahomie and I have been talking about this a little bit, Gareth, but do you think that there's just been a lack of leadership? I mean, I know that Gini Wijnaldum has been kind of the fourth captain, and he's been the captain on the pitch, but he's not the most vocal guy in the pitch. You know, he's not going to take a game by the scruff of the neck like we used to see Steven Gerrard do, or even Jordan Henderson. He's not as vocal as Virgil van Dijk or James Milner. I mean, is that kind of what we're lacking here as well?
I think it is. I think that is definitely a part of it. No two ways about it. I mean, you know, people have been saying things, haven't they, in the media, like, you know, I'm sick of hearing that Virgil van Dijk's the excuse for everything. Well, one, he is a world-class defender, so you will miss a world-class defender. But two, I just think, you know, he's a leader. He's great to be around. I think he sort of transforms how it is, you know, at Kirby and training at Anfield before the match and after the match and things like that. I mean, I've blow my own trumpet. I've been fortunate enough to interview him. And he has just sort of got this, like, presence. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's a good laugh. He's sound. He's dead normal. He's dead relaxed. He's also fucking massive. Do you know what I mean? So if he's on your side, you know, you're winning already. Do you know what I mean? You're looking across at him in the dressing room and you're thinking, tell you what, we've got every chance here today. Yeah. Now, with every respect to Nat Phillips, because he has done a good job for Liverpool, and who would have expected he'd get this opportunity, and fair play to him. But he is not Virgil van Dijk, and you're not going to look at him in the same way. So you've got it. You've got him missing, and then Henderson's missing now as well. I mean, one of the weird things about, you know, COVID pandemic, the grounds without fans in and all that, is that you can hear them now. And obviously there was the clip, wasn't there, of Henderson where, you know, it's just basic encouragement. But, you know, in any sport, in any working environment, if you've got someone going to you, yes, brilliant, do that again, you know, super, like, it helps. Yes. And as you say, you know, you don't get that from Genie. I don't think you're getting that from Nat Phillips or Kabak. You know, the fullbacks as well. I mean, Robertson a bit. Robertson will bark a little bit. Mane a little bit. But, you know, they're missing a string of leaders there. And that does make a difference. There's no two ways about it. And I totally get the idea of putting some nous in around Milner. I do think that these days he's not as creative as he once was. That's the bit of his game that's now starting to be on the downturn. I mean, fair play that he's still going at this age, and he's at the Champions and everything else. And he's another one. He's a great fella. Interviewed him as well, and you just get a sense from him. You know, he knows what he's doing. He knows what he's about, and he's probably going to go into management himself. So yeah, there's definitely an argument to having him on the pitch. And yeah, I take the point, actually. I think someone put in the comments, you know, you probably have him in the middle of the park at the moment over Kurt, especially when Kurt's, you know, battering people while on an international duty and stuff like that. I do love him, though. Someone put some nonsense there in your comments that he can't play a through ball and he doesn't bring anything to the team. Well, I'm not quite sure what you've been watching there, mate, but he definitely can do both of those things, and he knows where the net is as well. He's going to be fantastic, yeah. I think, for Liverpool.
Listen, ask you, like, do you feel that there's an argument of playing Milner having to start in the second leg against Madrid to protect Trent on the right hand side in order to provide leadership?
I mean, well, again, it's going to be dictated to by tomorrow, that, isn't it? Because if we see Milner tomorrow, I don't really think you see him on Wednesday as well. There's perhaps an argument to actually put Fabinho back in midfield, in defence for next Wednesday. Because what we talked about, or what I've talked and banged on about at length in this already, is the idea that of the trust of the defenders that you've got there. I think Fabinho's a great defender. I think he did really well at centre-half, but we did, no doubt, miss him from midfield. But if you drop him into defence, you've then got a space in midfield, and then you can start to rejig things around to get, for instance, Firmino and Jota on the pitch and just go balls out. And let's be honest, that's what we need to do. I think on Wednesday we need to do what we should have done out in Madrid. So we need, you know, again, it's all the cliches, it's the fast start, it's being out of the blocks, it's giving them something to think about. And I think, you know, Klopp in his press conference before Madrid talked about, you will see all of them on the pitch. And like someone said, well, will it be in this game? And he was like, well, I'm not going to, Zidane hasn't told you what his team is, I'm not going to tell you what mine is. Right. And obviously he didn't go with that. But the way he answered the question said to me, it's in his mind. It's just about when that's unleashed. Might be Villa. It might be Wednesday. I kind of think it works for Wednesday, because I think, you know, Madrid bounce in. They've got the lead, you know, the favourites to go through, all of those things. They need a little blow on the chin early on. They need something to wake them up. They need something to scare them. And I think, you know, straight away, if you put all of those lads in the team and you've got Fabinho back in defence, so, you know, it's not going to be as easy for you there, that might give them something to think about.
So who do you pull from the centre-back position? I'm assuming you're taking out Phillips.
Yeah, I think so. I think Nat's done great, don't get me wrong. But I also think, you know, he's been exposed a few times, and he was again the other night. I think we all know what his strengths are, and equally, I think we can all see what his weaknesses are. And you know, he gets done for pace, doesn't he? There's no two ways about that. That's not why he's there. You know, he wins headers. He gets in. He's a proper old-fashioned centre half, a bit sort of bit Stefan Honcho type. Blocker, stopper, that kind of thing. So yeah, I think he would be the obvious one if you were going to drop one of the two and make that change. But we'll see. It's just a theory. It's just an idea. Who knows? Who knows? He might start Naby Keita again.
I hope not.
Yeah. But then, let's say we do go that like the 4-2-3-1, which I'm assuming you're alluding to. Are you not worried the fact that that leaves one of Kroos and Modric free? And we saw how good they were in the first leg. Because it obviously means that we are outnumbered in midfield then. Because it would be 2-3. So it means one of them could be free. So isn't that a concern? Or you ask a lot of then, of if it's Firmino in the 10, to make sure he's doing the defensive work and dropping back.
I guess it's what I guess you're asking as well, though. Or I would ask you, what do you think Madrid are going to be doing when they come to Anfield, though? Because do you think they would look to play like they did on their own ground? Or do you think they arrive and they play like they did towards the end of the second half? I would argue the latter, because they've got the lead already. So they don't need to rock up and be overly adventurous. I think they looked quite comfortable going, we'll take 3-1. And then they went back a few yards and they just defended their edge of the box. And then we were doing all kinds of madness, throwing Shaqiri on and all the rest of it. And by that stage, it was like a training session. It was like, you know, they just defended what they had and they saw it out, and you know, everyone hailed it as being a professional performance. I think they will look to do something like that to Liverpool at Anfield on Wednesday, because that's what everyone's been doing ultimately. All these wins, you know, that sequence of defeats at Anfield that I talked about before, they've all been built on the same platform of turn up, let Liverpool have the ball, frustrate them, don't let them through, defend deep. And then it's getting in Liverpool's head when they don't score. They get frustrated, they're snatching at chances and all the rest of it. Whereas, you know, Neil was saying on our preview show today, he was like, well, you can make that out to be a problem in your own head and you can be like, oh no, this shit's happening again. Or you can just say, it's fine. It's fine. We trust our quality. Let's keep creating chances, and one of them will go in the back of the net.
That's where leadership comes in for me, and that's kind of what we're lacking right now. We don't have that person to, you know, yell at somebody. You know, last game against Real Madrid, I saw Trent Alexander-Arnold lose his head. I saw him completely lose his head, and he was one of the worst players on the pitch because of it. And I think if Jordan Henderson is in that game, that doesn't happen. I think he pulls Trent aside quickly, barks in his face, and then they move on, because Vinicius Junior got the most of Trent in that game, and he took him out of it. So we need that. That's what we're missing for me, and I think you just kind of hit those points.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Henderson's such a big miss, and I just think as well, I don't know how many of these people left there are now, but we used to have, I mean, we all get trolled, don't we? And we all get weird messages and weird tweets and stuff like that. It's just par for the course. If you put your head above the parapet and talk about Liverpool, someone somewhere will have some beef with you. And we had this really weird thing for ages at the Anfield Rap that we got stick, because quite a few of us said over a long period of time that Henderson was a good player. And it was like, there was a weird like sort of anti-Henderson cult within the Liverpool support. And it was like, well, what's this about? And then, you know, he's done everything that he's done. He's won everything that he's won. And there's still one or two kicking around, but it's nowhere near what it was. But I always say, you know, he's one that you notice when he's not there as well. And that's what's happening right now. And that's why we're having this conversation. I think, you know, it would have been a different story out in Madrid if he'd have been on the pitch. And I just think it is not. He's come on loads as a player. He's come on loads as a leader, and his game intelligence is absolutely brilliant and vital to Liverpool. And we've really missed him. And you're right to say that there isn't really anyone else. Especially when Virgil's missing as well. So yes, Milner. I mean, it was voted, you know, Genie was voted for, wasn't he, by the players? That's why the order of the captains goes in the order it does.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. I think I'd love to know if you, you know, we never will find out, but if you could sit down with them more and say, well, what was that based on? It would probably be more about they respect him, you know, they respect his experience, they respect what he's done for Liverpool, for in international football and all the rest of it. It probably, as you say, wouldn't be based on he's a leader. He's more like he leads by example rather than he leads as in he's barking out orders.
Yeah, and I think he's a popular guy in the dressing room as well. You know,
yeah.
And whenever you're watching LFC TV, you always see images and videos of Genie smiling, Genie, you know, cracking jokes with the players. He seems to be in every single group within the team. So that's another thing I would mention here. I mean, JG just said going on the limb here, but do you guys think that Genie was given the armband in a similar way that Coutinho was in a bid for him to stay? Or was it there was no one else left to take it? I actually think that was decided in the beginning of the season before all of our injuries, and he was given the fourth armband for every reason that Gareth just mentioned. But just going back to the Madrid game, and I guess probably even the Aston Villa game, we want to talk about Sadio Mane a little bit. Would you guys drop him for either of those games? You know, Jota wasn't great either against Real Madrid. His passing rating, I looked it up yesterday, was like 60%. He just couldn't string a ball together for the life of him. Would you play Bobby Firmino in either of these games? It looked like, you know, he was seriously missing. And, you know, Bobby's been a guy who's been getting a lot of shtick too recently. But similar to what you just said about Henderson, Gareth, you know, once we were missing Bobby, everybody was asking for him to come into the game. So I guess, what are your thoughts on those few players, Jota, Firmino, and Sadio Mane, and what would you guys do with them over the next couple of games? Well, homie, let's start with you.
I don't know. It's difficult because I read Neil Jones put a post out today, an article, which is really interesting on Mane, and it was talking about how Mane's numbers are actually very good. Now, in terms of he's making more dribbles this year than he was last year. He's had more touch in the box than he was last year. His defensive stats in terms of covering Robbo is actually higher this year than it was last year. So the article basically saying the only thing that Mane's missing is goals. Like, you know, his conversion ratio and it's gone down. But actually the amount of shots he's taken is higher. So it probably goes... I think with Mane, it's two things I said before. Like for me, it's he's not had a rest in like... God knows how many... You know, in the last 3 years, proper rest, yeah. You know. So obviously that's going to, you know, when you're playing that amount of games with no rest, it's going to catch up with your burnout. So that's also affected him. And then at the same time, obviously, you know, he's not scoring. He's getting frustrated from the lack of goals. And he's also, as Gareth mentioned, he's quite an emotional player. So he does get antagonized. And also, I think as well, that's where the tiredness in terms of his mindset has got to him. That's why he holds onto the ball for too long. You know, because there were even times in Madrid, he notice every game now, he falls over and, you know, and he falls to the floor. So I think with him, it's the case of we've got no choice probably to have to keep playing him, you know. So I have to hopefully that he gets a goal. Ideally, I would rest him for the rest of the season, but that's not going to happen, you know. So I think we have to play him. Maybe in both games, at least he's going to have to start the Madrid game. Maybe rest him tomorrow, but I don't know. But I think it's hard because we haven't got that many different options. Because even Bobby's suffering the same thing. He's suffering the same lack of tiredness and a lack of rest properly. You know, and I think obviously with Bobby, he looks better when he plays in the 10 for us rather than as a striker. So I think it's a difficult one to decide like what you do with him.
Gareth, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them where the squad's been, the depth of the squad, I think, has been exposed a little bit, hasn't it? I mean, you know, Klopp, I think he's injured at the moment anyway, but I mean, the very fact that I'm saying I think says it all. Like, he doesn't fancy Divock Origi anymore. I think, you know, a lot of us have sort of said, well, I think his race is run now at Liverpool and he'd benefit from going elsewhere and getting, you know, a regular game somewhere else. So, you know, that's an option that Klopp doesn't really turn to. Shaqiri as well, you know, it felt like we hadn't seen him for ages when he randomly popped up on the pitch the other night. So he does rely on this core of players all the time. And, you know, when you think about, you know, the rumours here and there of clubs coming sniffing around Mane and sniffing around Salah, and I always think, well, one of the reasons, one of the sells, if you like, from Klopp can be, will you always play? You always play, you know, it's not like I'm dropping, yeah, you're always playing. So it's a difficult one to manage for him. And I said before about Mane, I think he strikes me as a player, and we've seen it before where, you know, he can turn quickly. So, I think if he got a couple of goals against Villa, you know, very quickly you would see his confidence go up, and you'd probably see a player closer to what we used to. And, you know, you're right to say there that, I mean, there's been numerous pieces this week about Sadio and about his performances and going deep into his stats and all that. And, you know, there's not a whole lot wrong aside from, you know, he's not putting the ball in the back of the net as regularly as he was. But Liverpool aren't creating as much as they were either. You know, I think Sadio's one of the top assist makers this season, and ordinarily it's the fullbacks, and yet the fullbacks have got, you know, the numbers have dropped off a cliff. So, you know, there's loads of things wrong this season with the Liverpool machine. With Bobby, I think it's interesting as well that, you know, everyone was calling for him to be out of the side, and I'm saying, you know, his performances were awful. He was struggling. He looked tired. You know, he looked a bit shot. And then as soon as he's out, though, everyone's like, "Oh, we miss Bobby." And, you know, he's technically such a good player. He holds the ball well. And you know, you were looking at it, weren't you, the other night? And we're giving it away every 2 seconds. And you're like, I'm sure Bobby could have held onto the ball a little bit better here. You know, give us a little bit of respite from those balls over the top that were exposing the defenders. You know, he might have won some fouls. He might have, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's all hindsight. It's all, you know, could have, should have, and all the rest of it. But, you know, you're gonna see him. You're going to see Bobby over the next 2 matches. There's no 2 ways about it. And why wouldn't you? And it's just about, there's so many factors. I think it's really hard to work out what will happen because, you know, there's all the stuff about, like, degrade the players. I keep going to say Melwood. It's really hard not to say Melwood. Degrade the players at Kirby on their fitness. So, you know, there's green, amber and red and all that kind of stuff. So we don't know where these players are in terms of those zones, in terms of the fitness. You know, that might be determining some of the selections that we see. Klopp isn't always going to tell us everything. Why would he? Because the opponents watch as well, of course. So he's got to be careful what he says publicly. But I think there'll be a bit of that going on as well, like who's in the red zone, who's fitter, who's sharper, all the rest of it. You know, Bobby's had a little rest, hasn't he? Because he didn't play the internationals as well because of the COVID situation in South America. So I wouldn't rule out you see a decent Bobby performance somewhere soon. Do you know what I mean? I think, again, I kind of feel like the sort of the bye-bye Bobby stories were written a little too hastily. There's been so much of that. I keep shifting around. You know, now it's Sadio Mane. The other week it was Bobby. And it was like, you know, all it really takes is for these lads to have a bit of a rest. But now the whole situation's ridiculous, isn't it? And this is why Klopp gets frustrated. You know, they need a rest. Physically and mentally, they need a rest. But the football's incessant. It's just game after game after game. And I know we had that little break, but loads of them still played international football.
Yes.
Then as soon as the season ends, it's the Euros. And who's really asked about the Euros? I know I'm not. But, you know, and then it's pre-season. Then it's another. And it's just, like, we're just absolutely flogging these players to death. You know, it's too much. It's too much. And, like, something's got to give somewhere. And there they are, like, trying to vote for, you know, more Champions League games and all this. And it's just like, oh.
Too much.
It is too much. It's too. Yeah. I mean, even from a fan perspective, I think it's taken some of the beauty of it away. The fact that it's just on all the time. There's a match on all the time. And it's just like,
It's all about the money.
It is all about the money, mate. You're right. You're right.
Yeah, just go ahead. No, go ahead on you.
I was going to say, I just want to get to one last question, then we can get into some trivia from courtesy of Wahomie. But, Gareth, Wahomie and I got into a little contentious debate on our show last night about the center back situation. And I know that the chat is very passionate about it as well. So I'm just curious what your thoughts overall are about the center back situation. Obviously, you know, there seems to be a general consensus from the club that we should keep Kabak, get him on the cheap, maybe 8 to 12 million, somewhere around those lines, and maybe bring in somebody else. What do we do with Phillips? I mean, are you happy with what these two guys have done, Phillips and Kabak, respectively, so far with the team? Would you keep Kabak? Would you just get rid of both of them, sign two other players? What are your overall thoughts about the center back situation?
It's hard again, isn't it, in terms of, you know, there's information that we just don't have here. So what are the centre backs we've already got, the ones we know and love, the good ones, the first choice ones? What are they going to be like? How soon are they going to be back to the level that we know they can reach? Is Matip finally fixed? Because you know what, I love that fella. Like, I think he's a cracking centre half, Matip, and he doesn't get the praise he deserves because everyone just goes.
He's world class when he plays.
Yeah. But everyone just talks about the injuries and right, and you know, you can't really blame them. But when he's available, he's absolutely class. So those three are all great, and we can't say they're not. But what we can say is the plan, you know, and the plan was, you know, Fabinho was the break glass centre half, and we broke the glass and we put him there. But we just missed them too much in the middle. It just didn't work for that reason. He was all right as a centre half, and that's why I think he still might, you know, he could. He could use him there again, but we've got to do something. And Phillips, I think Phillips is interesting. In like I say, I think he's done fantastically to take his chance in the way that he did. I think it was clear to me that the manager didn't really fancy him. He was on his way out. He was virtually gone to Swansea. I think there was about 10, 11 other championship level clubs that wanted to buy him. And look, fair play to him. His stock will have gone up now. He might get himself a move to the lower to the middle Premier League now, because he's proven that he can cut it at that level. But I just don't think stylistically he fits to what Liverpool want and need going forward. So he's, you know, like we said before, he can get caught, and Liverpool want to play a high line. That's their answer to the sides that sit deep. He also, you know, he's not a man. He's got better, and you know, you see him play a few passes and stuff like that, and his confidence has gone up. There was a lovely one, I think it was against Arsenal, where he just took it out the sky, and you were like, "Oh, go ahead, Nat." You know, his confidence has gone through the roof, and fair play to him. But I just don't think you're not going to see him bringing the ball out from the defence. He hasn't got the pace, and I still think he'll move on, Nat Phillips. Kabak, I think the jury's still out, and that's the idea. The idea is that the jury's out. I mean, I think it was a good deal to be able to say, okay, well, we get all of the rest of the season to look at him, and we'll see how he does. And if he doesn't cut it, we can say bye-bye. And if he does cut it, we can buy him, and we can buy him at a fairly cut price fee. So it made loads of sense. I think the jury's still out on him. I see him some weeks and think he's cracked it. And then I see him other times, and that, you know, you see mistakes again. So, but it's still early on. He's a young lad, all of those things. So we'll see. But I still think they've got to be getting another one. I mean, I've completely forgot the lad's name, but we've been linked with that other lad, haven't we? Another 21-year-old. I'd want us to be getting someone experienced, though, me. You know, I absolutely loved it when we just went out there, balls out, chest out, bang, we're buying Virgil. I think the problem, of course, is if you go out and try and recruit someone at that level, they look at it and go, well, you've got Virgil, and you've got Gomez, and you've got Matip, and you've got a young lad there. You know, I'm not guaranteeing my game here. You know, I think we as fans always do the thing, surely they want to play for Liverpool, surely they want to play for Jurgen Klopp. And yeah, but I think they're a lot more aware now of how much game time they'll actually get. And not many of them, you know, certainly the more experienced players want to come and just sit round on the bench. Do you know what I mean? So it makes it difficult. So I can imagine your debate went on for some time, because there's so many facets to it, isn't there?
Everything that you just said is what I said yesterday, but to what homie came back and said that, look at teams like Real Madrid, look at teams like Man City, like they have so many different players in different positions. Look at Bayern Munich. So, I mean, I think both sides definitely have a point, but I was just curious to hear your side of it. Mohamed, do you have anything to add?
That's a difficult one. Like, you know, like, I can see it. I heard both of your points. It's a difficult one. You know, but I do feel like what I would say is that any prospective player coming in is going to know that Gomez's knee blew up when you hear about it. Like, he's not going to come back to the same level he was at before. Even Van Dijk. I don't think Van Dijk's going to come back and able to play the amount of games he was before as he did, like, you know, once he comes out of the injury, because the injury is quite serious too when you look at the scar on his I'm not even political. I think we definitely need two centre backs in the summer for me. You know, that's just my personal feeling. You know, I think like I said before that Cabot and Felix hadn't been tested, you know, previously. And the Madrid game they were tested, but obviously, you know, I still don't think Cabot's good enough. I'll stand by that. I still don't think in the long run Cabot's good enough for us. But for the time being, it is what it is in terms of us, you know, what we have. But what I was going to ask you, Gareth, is what about, do you feel that Konate, because there's been a lot of rumours recently with Konate. Even it came out today that Chris Folk is saying that that the fee for him is going to be like 34 million euros and that Liverpool are advanced talks. But other people are saying it's not true. But what have you heard about in terms of Konate? And do you feel that he would be the right addition to come in and potentially partner Van Dijk and challenge Gomez for that spot? Because even with Gomez, fantastic centre-back, but he still has issues over time and concentration that can still cost him in games, you know? So,
yeah, I think Gomez's ceiling, though, is still high. And, you know, fingers crossed he is back to where he was, you know, fitness-wise when he's fully recovered. Because I think he's brilliant, Gomez, myself. And I think, yeah, you know, he does make one or two mistakes, but you got to remember he comes in as a teenager to Liverpool, thrown in at left back. He's played right back. He's played centre half. You know, he's got pace. He can play the ball. I think he was getting better and better. And Virgil loves playing with him. You know, they've got like a real partnership on and off the pitch. So, but yeah, on Konate, now that the likes of Dave LFC chats there reminding me of his name. Thanks, Dave. And hello, Dave, as well, by the way. Yeah, to me, it'd be odd to sign two 21-year-old centre halves in one summer, because if you got Kabak as well, that's what you'd be doing. And that to me doesn't add up. That, you know, like I was saying, when you start to think about the experience, because if you think about some of the lads we've had kicking about and we've brought in, and we've, you know, I'm really bad on names today. My memory is completely gone. What's he called? He went to Wolves. So he's another one, isn't he? Where, you know, he was not of an age. He was highly rated. He'd looked all right as well when you know he'd had the chance here and there. But then Liverpool were happy to let him go as part of the Jota deal. So I wonder whether they've learned a bit of a lesson in terms of, you know, because I've always said, you know, forever that I think it's one of the hardest positions to play. And I think if you're a kid, it's even harder, because any mistake you make, it's just so much under the spotlight. Like if Harvey Elliott comes back to Liverpool, and I hope he does because he looks absolutely brilliant.
Yes.
If Harvey Elliott comes back to Liverpool and, you know, gets a chance somewhere along the way, and, like, you know, he misses a chance or he tries to take someone on and it doesn't work or whatever it may be, everyone will just go, ah, he's just a kid, it's Sam, don't worry about it. Whereas Harvey Elliott was a centre-half and cocks up and up and ended up in the Liverpool net, he'd probably be getting death threats on Twitter, do you know what I mean? That's the difference between those positions. So I think it makes more sense to, like I say, it does depend on where those other lads are going to be at. Like, they might just say, look, Mata, we can't trust them in terms of his injuries. We can't trust them to be on the pitch more often than not. I mean, you remember that run of games he had, the last run of games he had. Apparently they were nursing him through that. Do you know what I mean? He was basically playing with an injury, and then eventually he collapsed and he had to go and get surgery. So, you know, there may be that when they're talking about what they're going to do, they say, look, we can't rely on that. And we don't want Fabinho back there anymore. We want him in the middle of the park. And then two 21-year-old lads, I think it'd be one or the other. So one or the other of Kabak or Konate, and then another experienced centre-half is what I would do.
My final question to you is, so we all know that Liverpool's big European nights were based on the 12th man. You know, based on the Anfield role, yeah. Barcelona comeback, the win in 2005 in Istanbul, all those are based on big Europe, having the fans there. Like, going to the second leg, do you feel that we can come back and beat Madrid and go through with no fans?
I mean, as I was saying before, when we were talking about this, I think it's a huge shame, and it's definitely a percentage removed that would have favoured Liverpool us not being there, because the European nights are undoubtedly special at Anfield. It's not even a thing anymore. Like, there was a thing for a while. And I remember us talking about it. I remember writing about it myself, where people were starting to say, is it just romanticism now about Anfield's atmosphere? But then, you know, when Klopp came back, and when we played Dortmund at Anfield, for example,
yeah,
you know, that was unbelievable. That was off the scale. And, like, you know, we all know what happened. But, you know...
Were you at that game?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. There was honestly a point in that game where Dortmund's players were looking at each other, just going like, what the fuck is this? Do you know what I mean? Like, we have not experienced this before. And you know, when you've had the likes of, you know, John Terry, who you know, has got plenty of reason not to like Liverpool fans, given some of the songs we used to sing. You know, he talked about that semi-final, about how, you know, how he'd never experienced anything like that before. So it is special. It is different. You know, I don't really care if rival fans want to come and tell me I'm talking shite and it's just as good at their ground, because I know it's not. It's just not. It absolutely isn't. And it's gone back years as well. I mean, a bit of a forgotten semi-final in Europe was Barcelona in the UEFA Cup in 2001. I was at that as well. And the atmosphere that night was off the charts as well. But it doesn't get talked about, because, you know, there have been better ones. Like Chelsea in 05 is the top one for me, in that it was, I swear down, and I'm not even exaggerating, the Kop as a structure was moving that night. Jeez. Because everyone was roaring as loud as he could. Everyone was jumping up and down, swaying around. And I swear you could feel actual movement in the structure of the car.
Were you at the Barcelona game 4-0?
Yeah, yeah.
That wasn't fun.
I would probably. It's hard to choose between Chelsea and Barcelona. They were both absolutely unbelievable. But, you know, so we've got that reputation. We've got that thing, and I think, you know, our players feed off that. The opposition will slightly fear it. And you just haven't got that. I mean, you know, you think about, you've seen it on faces of opposition players as well. You see them come out, and when they're playing the Champions League music and the Kop's just mad, feral, wild, you know, this sea of flags and mad people who've been on the aisle all afternoon. Like, you can see them, they're just looking at it going, what's this about? So we haven't got that, and so it will be a different type of game. And look, I still think Liverpool can beat them. I think Liverpool can definitely score against them. My problem is, can we keep a clean sheet? I think that's the big question about Wednesday night. But there's no doubt about it. It's a disadvantage that we haven't got the fans in there. It will be nowhere near as good as it could be.
Definitely. Yeah, it looks like the bookies have Liverpool as the favourites in this one. But I don't know if that's the favourites to go through, maybe just to win the game. Mm. But we'll see. But we well, homie, did you want to get to the trivia questions?
Yes, trivia time.
Oh, hello.
This is the segment we just started here, so it's been pretty popular.
So the first trivia question is, what was your favourite childhood toy when growing up?
My favourite childhood what, sorry?
Toy.
It depends what I'm allowed to have for this, because to be honest with you, it was basically me bike or me computer. And did they class as toys, do you think?
No, because I think toys like an action figure or...
See, I wasn't into all that.
Teddy bear,
I was a very simple man, boy. So I was like, you know, even at a young age, I was like kicking a ball on me bike, or once computers came about, because I am an old fella, by the way. You know, computers. So, you know, I can remember, I was talking about this on an Anfield app show today. So there's probably no one listening, including yourselves, who will remember this computer. But I had a ZX Spectrum 48K, which was a little black computer with rubber keys. Look it up after the show. It's absolutely shit. And the graphics were awful, like really blocky. The sound was terrible. I eventually upgraded to a Commodore 64, which was slightly better. But yeah, I'm really showing my age. But I got into those things. But yeah, my bike as well. I just loved, I had a BMX and I just used to go everywhere on my BMX, do skids, do wheelies, do all the stuff that the little scallies around Liverpool do today. It's a bit of a tradition.
You're a little bit of both. You were both like athlete/nerds. You know, you had both sides of the story.
Yeah, I just, in terms of like an actual toy, I was just never into all that. I never had like Action Men or anything like that. I had those little, do you remember those like little green soldiers that you got in like a big tub and you just poured loads of them out and like you played army with them? I had them.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I mean, you know, when I look back, I think, you know, mum and dad didn't buy me many toys there. Shit.
What are you, Andrew?
I was big into the Ninja Turtles. I don't know if you guys remember those or if you had those over
there. Yeah.
So I was big into Raphael. He was the one with the red bandana.
He was kind of like
what's that?
Daggers.
Yeah, he had I don't even know what they're called, like the daggers. But yeah, and he was kind of the wise guy, the guy that always embellished a story and stuff like that. So I always loved that. He was my go-to toy.
What about Michelangelo, though? He was the party dude, wasn't he?
He was the funny guy, yeah. But Raphael was kind of like the badass. And yeah. I always, you know, sympathized with him. So,
yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was quite controversial over here. I don't know if it was in America, but when it came to the UK, yeah, it was controversial because it was seen as like promoting violence. And I think some of the like the dialogue in the cartoons and stuff was a bit fruity at times, and it was changed over here. It was, so instead of, it was Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles instead of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, really?
They changed it to Hero rather than Ninja because it was seen as, you know, promoting violence and stuff.
Interesting.
So we've got a trivia here. So someone's got a trivia here. No, it's not really, but 1892 podcast saying like your dream for being a Liverpool fan, any generation, who would be your dream signing? Go with you, Gareth.
If I could just sign anyone, is this? Yeah.
I think it is.
You know who I absolutely loved when I was growing up, and I was watching something on Sky before, like football years, and it's shown a little bit of them. I loved Romario. It might be one where I'm showing my age and you're all going with Mario. But honestly, he was absolutely brilliant. He was like, he was, you know, Brazilian, got all the skills, but he was a proper narc. Like, he was always kicking off on people, arguing with people. And I like someone who's got a bit of a fire burning in them. So Romario for Liverpool would have been absolutely amazing. I remember we were going to sign Laudrup, and for whatever reason, that didn't happen. And I was always gutted about that. I wish Liverpool had signed Laudrup. But yeah, if you're just saying, is there a player that I really loved that I would have loved to have seen for Liverpool, I'm going to say Romario because I absolutely loved him growing up.
Yeah, for me, it'd be Ricardo Kaká. He was, next to Steven Gerrard, I think the best midfielder in the world in their time. He was just phenomenal on the ball. He had so much strength. He could score any which way he wanted to. And his display in that first half of the 2005 Champions League final against Liverpool was out of this world. That ball that he played to Crespo was one of the best passes I've ever seen. So I loved Kaká. You know, he played in the States for a little while and he was still good then, but it'd probably be Ricardo.
For me, it would have been Real Ronaldo because
he was quality.
I remember him at Barcelona, Inter Milan. It was just like different.
He was unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable.
I just wish we had the kind of money to like have gone out and bought him, because God, imagine him at Liverpool. You know, he would have been amazing.
I hate the way he's sort of routinely called Fat Ronaldo because that does him such a disservice. Because when he was at his best, he was absolutely unbelievable. There's like you just watch. I was telling my son about him not long ago. My son's only 12, and we would just watch the YouTube compilation of his goals and I had to pick my son's jaw up off the floor. He was just like, oh, because I show my son Real Ronaldo and I showed him Zidane, and he was just like, whoa. It's like, yeah, you've got a bit to go, son. Keep practicing.
Yeah, I think the thing with that is a lot of people who are born now don't really know him, you know, or later that didn't see him in his prime. They don't know how really good he was. So they just see him when he was at Madrid. Even though in Madrid he still had a very good goal scoring record, but he wasn't the same kind of player in terms of being able to do the skills or dribbles. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you saw him in that prime when he was at Inter Milan, Barcelona, he was like the phenom, as they called him.
Yeah.
All right, next trivia question. What was your favorite 90s American teen show that you grew up watching?
Okay, I've got an answer for this one. So it was The Wonder Years. Do you remember that?
Wonder Years. Wow.
It was absolutely quality. Never missed an episode. Loved Kevin. Loved his dad. loved his knobhead brother. Yeah, it was absolutely, and like, you know, there was always the thing about, you know, was it Winnie, I think, who lived next door? You know, would she ever be his girlfriend and all that? It was absolutely boss.
I actually have a similar take. Not Wonder Years. I liked Boy Meets World, who's Ben Savage's brother. Boy Meets World was my favorite show by far. It was part of a TGIF lineup that I think it's ABC had. It was Thank Goodness It's Friday, or Thank God It's Friday. And Boy Meets World was on for, I think, a half hour at like the 8 o'clock slot. And it was the same thing, like two best friends growing up together next door to each other. Teacher lived next door. Topanga was the girl that they grew up with, and she was the love interest. It was amazing. Amazing. Topanga was my first real crush. So phenomenal show. Phenomenal show.
Mine was California Dreams. Don't know if you guys know that one.
California Dreams.
Yeah, it was about these kids who live in Malibu, who would surf and they went to college. It was quite big when I was growing up. But yeah, that was my one. Okay, that's the end of my. Unless anyone else has any good trivias. Okay, what's your favorite takeaway, Gareth?
I used to always say Chinese, but I think an Indian's edge the head these days, because that's what I always end up having. I think it, as well, it's like my kids absolutely love Indians, and so, you know, when the kids stay with me and stuff, we'll end up ordering an Indian. And, you know, I love the whole process. I love getting, you know, the papadoms and the dips, and, you know, it feels like an event to get a curry in. I still love a Chinese as well, but yeah, a curry I think is my favorite takeaway, like I say, because it feels like, you know, you've got to prepare and you get the plates out and, you know, you've got the papadums and the dips, and yeah, like I say, it feels like a big enjoyable process. And like, especially if, you know, the kids might get a different curry to me, and so you'd have a bit of a dip of that, and, you know, fantastic.
Dave says he likes chicken curry fried rice with peroni. What peroni?
So takeaway for you is when you know,
sounds good, Dave.
You get food from the restaurant, you take it out, right?
Yeah.
You guys call it, yeah, so we call it a takeout, getting takeout. Oh. We don't call it takeaway. But yeah, for me, it's Mexican food, definitely. I love ordering Mexican food to go. It's the best. You get it in like a nice fat burrito, and it's so good.
For me, probably the same. I like Chinese, for me, my favorite. So yeah, it's just onion rings, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I love my Chinese. All right, I think that's the end of my two questions. Unless you got any?
No, I think that's a good place to stop. I think we're all probably looking for some takeaway right now. But Gareth, thanks so much for joining us. This was an absolute blast and an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. You guys in the chat haven't checked out the Anfield Wrap, be sure to do so. They have some of the best content out there on Liverpool, and Gareth's on there all the time. So Gareth, again, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, boys, really enjoyed it. And yeah, if there are people out there who haven't checked out the Anfield Wrap, please do. And also, if you already, you bang into it and you love it, tell other people as well, because guess what, the business has been affected by COVID like everyone else, but we're still here, we're still going. But you know, any help and hands to help market what we do, very much welcome.
Thank you very much again. And to everybody in the chat, you guys are on fire tonight. Great stuff. Really appreciate you guys as well. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit the like and subscribe button. Homie will be on tomorrow. Steven and I are going to be off. I have some wedding duties to attend to. But Homie will be on after the match tomorrow.
I'm not sure who he's going to be joined by, and I'm not sure if he knows yet either, but we will be there. And again, thanks to everybody in the chat, and thank you to Gareth. So up the Reds, and we'll see you soon.